If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. We have with us today, Lindsay Jewell. Lindsay, if you listened to the last episode, Lindsay was telling us her story, an incredible, incredible story. The courage that she had in order to come out and tell the story. We've gotten the first part. This is going to be part two. So I want to welcome Lindsay. Welcome back to the show. Again, how are you doing right now?
I'm good.
I'm glad to hear it. I know it's been tough. But my hat's off to you for, you know, doing what you're doing. And, you know, there are people out there, certainly drug addicts and people that have been abused, et cetera. And they need to know that, you know, they can get clean and they can stay clean just as you did. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to those troubled years. You were in college, I think, last time we spoke. Let's pick it up from there.
Yes. And actually, let me go back because I missed an event. And so sorry, because there is a ton of events in my life that have happened. So as I'm talking, I'm like, okay. So when I was 18 and I just got out of high school, right before I started college, I'd worked my first kind of business job at the Blockbuster Corporation when they were still around. And
Blockbuster. Yeah. That's
the VHS
the VHS tapes. Yeah, right. I remember Blockbuster. Okay, yeah. So
they're located in Texas. So
right.
So that was my first like business little. You know, I was working like a temp job, but I was all excited because I got to dress up in, you know, business casual clothes and stuff, and felt grown up, and went to, they had their little annual Christmas party, and I went with a coworker, and, you know, there was drinking there. Of course, we weren't supposed to drink, but we did. You know, somebody got us alcohol, and next thing you know, two people approached me, and this, you know, I was in a very pretty velvet, I'll never forget, velvet red dress. Like I felt absolutely like a Cinderella. And this person that came up to me said, if I wanted to like leave the party with him and his wife, and they had Coke. Right. I had been sober. I hadn't used, and it just always seemed to find me, and I just seemed to not be able to resist it. So to make matters short, I was highly taken advantage of, right? My mother took me to a hospital to get a sexual assault kit done. And I don't know if it was just during the time, this was, I believe, about 2000, 2001, maybe. I'm trying to think of the year, but so I did these really invasive sexual assault kits that you get done at hospitals. And the cops came back in. I told them what happened. I told them the drugs, told them alcohol, you know, all this stuff. And they said, because there was drugs and alcohol involved, that they can't file a case. And so pretty much those words told me that I was a slut. I was... just all of these horrible things. So that is the day I went home and took a straight blade to my wrist. And I still bear these scars with me every day of my life. And that's humiliating. That's probably why a lot of women don't even go towards that option. It was absolutely humiliating.
So when you slit your wrists, okay, like what was going on? Did your parents find you? Did you tell them that you just slit your wrists, or like, how come you're not dead?
Well, because at this point, cutting, I mean, it was the addiction of cutting. Like, how do I explain that?
All right. We don't have to go into it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
fine. Keep going.
So I cut them pretty deep and my mom mended them. Okay. it's bad when you start getting used to, not just me, but my parents getting used to this behavior and getting used to this stuff where it's just another day for anybody. And it's not normal for other people, but it becomes normal to your life, you know? So that happened. Definitely quit Blockbuster. Cause that was a
shocker there. Yeah.
yeah. And went off and started my college and stuff. So finally, I got into my dream college, which was University of Northern Texas in Denton. And, you know, at this point had really thought I'd kind of found what I wanted to do with my life. I actually wanted to be a drug and alcohol counselor, if that's not crazy enough. And I actually, if it wasn't that, it was between that being a parole or probation officer. Because I really wanted to help people. Mm-hmm. Instead, I went into human resources management. Don't know why, okay? But actually, no. The reason I didn't become a drug and alcohol counselor is because I didn't think I had my stuff under control. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't give advice to other people if I was lying to them. And so that deterred me away from that. And that is because I met husband number one, who was my next door neighbor. And he wasn't in college or anything, but found out quickly that he was a coke dealer. So you see how my life, and I was, once again, when I got into college, I was sober. I mean, we went out to the bars and stuff. That's what we did, you know, but I wasn't touching drugs, nor did anybody need to know that I had been once drug addict and, and it's just so crazy, right next door to me, like, was not just, someone that could find it, was someone that had it. And so, we ended up having a relationship. And I honestly really thought at that time, like, I loved him. And, it was constant fighting. It was constant. I mean, add drugs on top of that. It's just constant chaos. All my relationships have been constant fighting and making up and, mm-hmm. and just all unhealthy. And definitely dabbled back into the drugs like full speed because there was an unlimited supply of them, and stopped taking my birth control pills and got pregnant. Not intentionally. It's just when usually people are on prescribed medications and they start doing drugs, they neglect other things in life. So right. They stop taking medications. So I got pregnant and, was scared to death. Was scared to death because I was scared to ever have kids because of what somebody did to me. And I couldn't imagine raising kids in a world that I've seen. And I even remember my mother saying, like, she didn't like the guy at all, right? She had every reason to. But I remember her asking me, do you want to have this baby? And I said, I couldn't have an abortion because I would always sit there and think, my kid would be this many years old, and I couldn't do it. It was my responsibility. And so quickly got married to this guy, more to the fact, he's Italian, kind of, he came from a very Italian kind of family. And it was kind of something that we felt like we should do, is get married. We have a child on the way, mm-hmm. And and I really thought, I guess, a baby, and a lot of women, I think, understand this, think that this baby can change people. It'll change things for you. It'll make everything better for you. And, my...
It doesn't.
Yes, that is true. It does not. But it, for some reason, sounds, I don't know why it does that in the mind. You learn. especially, you know, my first husband, you know, he preached about what a great father he's going to be. And he did stop selling drugs. He did. He got a job. And, you know, so I held on to that hope and saw that things could change. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had my daughter by emergency C-section. That was scary enough, you know, at the hospital. I was sitting there alone in the hospital room because my husband at the time decided to go out gambling while his wife had just given birth by emergency C-section. So that hurt.
I hear. Yeah.
And
so that led to that I assume that was part of the reason why you divorced about a year later.
Yeah. And I feel, I didn't know at the time, but you know, when two people get together, you come from two different lifestyles. So your parenting styles and your values and morals are two different things that you might not see at the time. And I think he wanted a wife that was more of a stay at home mom that cooked and cleaned, and that wasn't me.
Right.
And, he was very controlling. And like would tell me I couldn't wear certain shirts to school. And I was like, oh my God, it's like almost a turtleneck, you know, like, so filed for divorce. Difficult decision, because at this point I definitely would say I was codependent, very codependent. You know, and he went back to Texas. And oh my God, within two weeks, he was back with his ex-girlfriend. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like it was, and he doesn't till this day really have a thing to do with our daughter. But he went and started another family and took care of all these other kids. You know, he doesn't pay child support. He doesn't do anything, right. But he takes care of a whole nother family. And that's hurtful in itself because it made me feel rejected, or it made me feel replaceable very quickly, right. You know? And, so after that divorce, I think at the end of that year, I ran into who became husband number two. And I think at this point I'm trying not to mourn, you know, like I'm trying to bypass the grief stages by jumping into another relationship or trying to find another band-aid that will quickly get rid of the feelings of, you know, hurt and grief. And I met husband number two. He was a soldier. He was a soldier who joined right before 9/11 happened. So he had been on a couple of deployments. And I thought I had done better than the last guy because this one had a job. He had a car, like he had a legit job.
Right.
You know, my parents seemed to like him. I mean, he was the war hero. And he did have a lot of trauma also. This is where I realized that there are trauma bonds that we make with people.
Sure.
You know, when I heard his sad story, not of only deployments, but his mother was murdered, died in his arms. You know, I feel compassion for those things as a mm-hmm. human being. Right. I feel sorry. I feel sad because it's sick how we can fall in love with somebody based on pain and suffering. Like, I know how you feel and I can comfort you through your pain, you know? And so I know when I met him, he got deployed for a short deployment and then had to come back for his mother's like murder trial because his stepfather murdered his mother. I quickly got pregnant with my second child, which is my son. And now at this time, let's see, my second husband had injured his back in the military and they started dishing out a lot of pain pills. He was also a drinker. I'm also obviously, you know, this, I'm not going to label myself just an addict. I was an ex, you know, recovering and going back.
Right.
So we got addicted to these pain pills. My second husband got out of the military, got medically discharged from the military, and fell into a heap of depression. And I had to kind of just try to keep the family together. It was very difficult. At this time, in 2006, I had graduated college with my bachelor's degree.
I would have to say quite an accomplishment. After everything you've been going through, it's a tremendous accomplishment. Again, my hat's off to you.
Yes. Thank you. I am proud of that. I still am very proud of that. And it was being a single mother for the moment, you know, with my daughter that really made me finish my degree. And so my second husband gets out of the military and, like I said, falls into a depression. And now at this time, I had just got a job at Boeing and I was so freaking, just ecstatic because my father works for Boeing. Okay. Wow. And so I felt so important, not to mention the pay was actually finally what the college pay said it was supposed to be and stuff. And I felt so grown up. I was working at missile defense. Like I just felt so awesome. But because of my choices in these relationships with unhealthy people and the fighting and the toxicity, me and my second husband got into an argument about something I can't even remember because it's been so long ago. He up and took our infant son and started heading to New York. He's originally from upstate New York, but just started. I was at work and he, next thing you know, was on the road with our son heading to New York, and I fell apart. It was almost like kidnapping. It was just, so I went right back into my coping mechanism with that. Went back into my cocaine addiction. And then I lost my job at Boeing. Not to say that they found out about they knew something was going on. I started becoming very unreliable and stuff. So I lost that job. And my father really beat me up for that one, which was very hard to overcome for a long time. I felt like a complete failure. And, so at this time, I think I got on unemployment. I was trying to make ends meet. My parents decided not to like my second husband. So they kicked us out of the home that my father had actually bought for us, you know. My God, I went through so many resources trying to get our rent paid for this new place we lived in. Couldn't find work because this is after 9/11 and 9/11 really did affect jobs. It affected everything. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And I could not find another job. And then it dawned on me, the military is always hiring.
That's true.
So
you joined the army.
I did. I was 28 years old when I joined. The cutoff age at that point was 42, I believe. And like I said, I remember my second husband telling me, I'll never make it through basic. I'll never do this. And but I did. I joined because honestly, I had a family and needed freaking money.
Right.
You know, so I did clean up the addictions. I cleaned up, I prepped for the military, I prepped my sit-ups, push-ups, everything, you know, and went in and joined on a 3-year contract and just so wanted to learn strength because I was so, in my opinion, such a weak person. And I wanted to learn that I could be strong. The Army did teach me that. Army did. But what happens with my next great event? My unit was deploying to Iraq. I joined the military in 2010, right? And in 2011, our unit was deploying to Iraq and they send us to NTC, the National Training Center in California, to do our training, right? And I was cleared all the way. Our standard readiness procedure, they clear you with all these tests to make sure you're good to go for deployment, and was cleared, except was put on a hold at the end for stop because I stopped taking the antidepressant, right? And the lieutenant told me that when we get back from NTC, she'll clear me. So anyway, so as I'm at NTC out in California doing our training, my brother calls me and he says, do you remember, I'll just give you his generic name, but Bill. And I said, this was the molester, right? He said, so he was released from prison, right? I could not believe this because I am in my 30. I think I just turned like 30, right? This guy had been released from prison. And he said that the DAs, the district attorneys, wanted to contact us. One did leave me a message because he got out of prison, right? Mm-hmm. Went to work for a youth camp because he found God. Maybe he did at the moment, and then he lost him. But he went and then molested a bunch of other kids again. So what sucks is by this time we have the internet, obviously, and I could just type in his name, and I read all of the articles, and oh my God, was I re-traumatized. I mean, he literally, I believe, worked for like some kind of ministry, like some guy believed that he found his faith and could be redeemed, reformed, whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that, I guess. But so this guy, the molester, was at hotels with these little children, all boys, one convenient girl. I was like, what is it with this guy? And it just, oh my God. You know, they were going to have us retestify because obviously this was his second whole time doing this. People don't know that sex offenders laws changed in the early 90s. Now it's life sentences because they kind of realized that this poison just doesn't ever rid itself. And I do remember at the trial from this man when I was a child that he did say that he was molested. And I think that's where it helped some of my forgiveness for him. But he decided to poison again, you know, with whatever happened to him. And, but yeah, so he molested a bunch of other boys and one convenient girl again. And, they gave him a life sentence. What killed me is reading the cases about us, even though they can't say our names and stuff, right? Saying that we're adults now, just reading that and then thinking of these little kids that are gonna grow up, their innocence is gone, and they are going to experience the worst hell. You know, sorry.
It's okay.
It just killed me to know that these, I don't remember how many kids it was, you know, maybe under 10 of them, but all of these little kids were going to go on this path that I knew so familiar, that I was so familiar with. And it's a path of turmoil. It's a path of sadness, loss of identity. And it just broke my heart because there are so many events in my life, right? That, and I was just talking to my friend about this. There's so many lives in my events in my life that I could have changed maybe, right? But there's one event in my life that I had no control over. And that was the molestation. If you want to talk about destiny, I guess that was my destiny. There is nothing I could have done to prevent that. The addiction, I used the resentment from that man to fuel the addiction, right? And the addiction led me to bad places and bad people, right? And those were my choices that I made. But that one event, I can never go back in time, no matter how much I do in my brain. There's nothing I could have done about that one, you know? So needless to say, after reading the articles and stuff, it re-traumatized me. Oh my gosh. And I thought for some reason that I had been through so much therapy and all this stuff that I was cured from it. And I wasn't. So I was stationed in El Paso, Texas.
Lindsay?
Yes.
Okay, Lindsay, once again, we're out of time. And I think we can both use a break right now. I know it's been very traumatic for you. It's starting to get to me too. So we'll pick this up at the next episode. Okay, let me just tell people, thank you so much. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Shoman. I'm your host. Remember, if you feel like you're stuck in the mud, like you're spinning your wheels, like you're wasting time in your career, your business, your life, if you know you're not enjoying all the success, satisfaction, and significance that you desire, then it's time for you to book a call with me at www.callwithari.com. Check out my Whispers and Bricks Coaching Academy. And until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.